and welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Folt. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. And joining us on the line from Albuquerque, New Mexico, is the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Folt. Mickey, how have you been?
Been well. You, Rob?
Not too bad. No complaints at all. Last time out, Mickey, we had decided that we had pretty much exhausted the topic of toxic metals, so we're switching our focus now to metals that you say are critical for modern technology, and they're referred to as doping agents. In this context, what does that mean? What does that term mean, doping agent?
Well, a doping agent would be a metal that is a minor but essential part of some product, and that's what these things are. They really fall into the group of specialty metals. And the first one we're going to start with is gallium.
That's right, gallium number 31 of the periodic table. Fill us in on its history, when it was first discovered, properties, characteristics.
It's soft, silvery, brittle metal, one of the few metals that can be liquid at ambient temperatures, in this case 30 degrees C. So it will actually melt in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
It's not especially rare, a 17 ppm in the crust. It's one of the few substances known that has a higher density as a liquid than it does as a solid. So other things would be silicon, germanium, bismuth, and of course water. Has two stable isotopes. It diffuses into other metals quite easily, so it makes brittle alloys, and therefore it needs to be stored in polyethylene containers because it will attack most metals, as opposed to mercury, which is also liquid.
Mm-hmm.
at ambient temperatures. It is not toxic, and it wets both glass and skin.
Okay, and it's really what a byproduct, isn't it, of the production of aluminum and zinc?
Yes, it is a very minor byproduct of aluminum and zinc smelting, mainly bauxite, where it occurs on average of only about 50 ppm gallium in bauxite, but that is the main source, and it is only partially recoverable in these methods. So it's quite expensive. Production is pretty minuscule, but it's growing by leaps and bounds. 1986, 40 tons produced in the world. By 2007, that was up to 184 tons. 2012, 273 tons. And besides the primary production, recycling of scrap is quite important.
Okay, now we're going to be talking about gallium and its use in modern-day technology. I'm wondering, though, turning the clock back, Mickey, what were its earlier uses when it was first discovered?
Well, it was first discovered in 1875, but it was predicted by Mendeleev, the guy who essentially worked out the periodic table, in 1871. It is included in some very rare minerals, and recovered, as we said before, as a minor product of smelting.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, its uses were in high temperature thermometers. It is also been used in the past in some biomedical applications, plutonium pits for atomic bombs, solders. It produces very brilliant mirrors, and some minor alloys, there's an alloy called gallistan, which is gallium indium 10, and these things were used for the aforementioned applications in the past.
Okay, now when we fast forward it to today, Mickey, nearly all of gallium, and I believe you said in 2012 production was what, 273 tons. Almost all of that is consumed in electronics, and I believe semiconductors is at the top of the heap, is it?
Well, that's exactly right. Semiconductors comprise about 98% of the market, mainly as gallium arsenides and gallium nitrides. They're used in integrated circuits is the main use, but also as optoelectronics, especially LEDs and laser diodes, photovoltaics, etc. Demand is increasing quite boisterously as the world gets increasingly electrified with small-scale electronic instruments.
An interesting tidbit that I came across, Mickey, concerns a focused gallium ion beam, and this was used to create the world's smallest book. Do you know the name of that book?
Well, I have no idea what you're talking about, so you did a little different research than
okay.
I did.
The name,
so enlighten me.
Okay, the name of the book, Teeny Ted from Turnip Town. Now, this has been certified by the Guinness World Records as the world's smallest reproduction of a printed book. And all this took place at the Nano Imaging Laboratory at Simon Fraser University in Vancouver, British Columbia. So I've never read the book. I probably need a microscope to read it.
Probably a scanning electron microscope, it sounds like. So
yeah,
doesn't seem very practical. But your point's well taken in the fact that LEDs, light-emitting diodes, the primary source for those or the reason they work is because of gallium nitride. So with smartphone demand is very much increasing the demand for gallium and general lighting applications, auto instrument panels, etc., are increasing in demand. And it's kind of interesting. There's no U.S. production. There is one Utah company that recovers scrap and refines gallium. Gallium, the refining of it, is of utmost importance for semiconductor use. It has to be 99.99969 pure. Compare that, for instance, with your typical gold bar, which is 4/9 pure. So it has to be very pure. The worldwide plant capacity, and that would be both primary and secondary plant capacity, is immensely above current demand, and that has to do with expansion in China on the idea that LED TVs, backlighting was going to be a significant demand. That hasn't panned out. So because of this, the prices have been extremely volatile over the last couple of years, ranging, let's say, from 2008 to 2011. This stuff's quite expensive, by the way. $449 to $688 per kilogram. Last year in 2012, the price started the year at $580 a kilogram. By the end of the year, it was at $280 a kilogram. About 50% of it supplied by scrap. And even though there is very strong growth demand predicted, the price of it is very volatile. The ability to substitute is coming along, so there are several substitutes that could upset the gallium market. Regardless, the world's got plenty of gallium. We can always get more gallium through smelting of aluminum and the recovery, although all those methodologies are proprietary at this time.
And I would imagine your point, Mickey, about possible substitutes for gallium in technology, that is will be a theme running throughout the next few interviews that we do on these metals, will it not? Because technology is always advancing, and so there's always going to be that question over whether or not one of the important ingredients used in that can be substituted.
Well, and that's very, very true, and you know, as supply and demand increase or decrease and prices go up or down, you know, man's always through technology innovating and trying to find cheaper components. So, you know, LCDs, organic LCDs are a possible substitute. There are developments in organic LEDs now. It competes with silicone and germanium in transistors. So although there are a few things that gallium arsenides, gallium nitrides are essential for. Substitution is certainly looming on the horizon.
Okay, well, that's probably a good way to wrap it up, Mickey. Next time out, what are you going to set your sights on?
Well, we'll jump right next door on the periodic table to the right and talk about a similar metal, germanium. Gallium and germanium often occur together, and germanium, once again, is very important for the semiconductor industry.
All right, great stuff. Thanks a lot, Mickey, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Okay, thanks, Rob. Look forward to it.
That's Mickey Fulp, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com, and you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.